This is James Corbett of The Corbett Report, and it is the 16th of April, 2011, here in Japan. And today I'm joined on the line by Holland van den Nieuwenhoff, a co-host along with James Lane and Bobby Kessler of the Free Mind Report, a nationally syndicated radio broadcast at freemindreport.com. He is a native of Oklahoma and served as a rifle squad leader in the Marine Corps. His efforts to spread information about government corruption and cover-ups led him to collaborate with the Oklahoma Bombing Investigation Committee in their efforts to uncover the truth behind the OKC bombing. He was instrumental in the formation of the first low-power FM station in Oklahoma that focused on truth and freedom issues. Holland, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, thank you for having me on, James. It's quite an honor to be on your show.
Well, it is great to have you here, and we have had the chance to become at least briefly acquainted as I was a guest on the Free Mind Report recently, but for those listeners out there who may be hearing you for the first time, perhaps you could fill us a little bit in on your background and your involvement with the OKC investigation.
Okay, well, I was born and raised in Oklahoma, although I was in the Marine Corps at the time the bombing happened on April 19th, 1995. I was deployed overseas most of that time, but I was still able to hear tidbits of truth that were leaking out that were contrary to the official story. I was trying to pay as much attention as I could. And a couple years ago, I moved back to Oklahoma and decided to get involved in trying to find out what happened. And I pretty much just went on my own independently and started writing a newsletter and passing it out. And that led me to meet Chris Emery, who I've collaborated with a lot over these past couple years. He's become a brother to me. Through those efforts and working with him, I met the members of the Bombing Investigation Committee. I was able to collaborate with them on several research projects. Later on, we moved into low-power radio. We set up a low-power radio here in Oklahoma, which has just recently been resurrected. And I'm currently working on a documentary along with my co-host James Lane, my co-producer and research assistant and writer out of New York, Wendy Painting. We're making a movie called A Noble Lie. It's about the Oklahoma City bombing. We're not really trying to pin together give you the ultimate answer to the bombing, because until we actually see all the evidence and all the videotapes involved, no one truly knows what truly happened. But we do know that the official story being told by the government is a lie. And that's one reason we called it A Noble Lie. That's from Plato's Republic. And it means a noble lie is a myth or untruth told by the elite to preserve social harmony and their social position. So we believe that there is a lie being told about the Oklahoma City bombing, and we're going to expose it. And we felt that a film documentary would be the best medium to pass this information on to the masses.
Well, there's no doubt film documentaries are extremely powerful ways of passing on information, so that is very exciting. But before we get too deep into that, I would like to take a moment. I'm sure some of my listeners who have been keeping their eye on the interviews tab of the Corbett Report have seen my recent interview with Jesse Trinidou, the lawyer who has done so much work in getting information out from the FBI via Freedom of Information Act requests regarding the OKC investigation. And of course, that all stems from the tragic torture and murder of his brother, Kenneth Trinidou, in an Oklahoma City federal holding center back in last decade. And it was his journey of discovery, really, from that incident that led him into the OKC bombing investigation. Holland, perhaps you can tell us a little bit from your perspective about that case and its significance.
Okay. Well, for anyone who wants any deeper background information, I suggest you check out James's podcast with Jesse. Jesse Trinidou has become a personal friend of ours. His brother was murdered in the El Reno Transfer Center, the federal transfer center in Oklahoma, just a couple of weeks after the bombing. His brother had been picked up on a parole violation in California and then for some unknown reason flown to Oklahoma, where a couple of days later he was dead. And the Bureau of Prisons tried to cremate the body before a proper medical examination could take place. Jesse is a lawyer in Utah, and he was trying to find out what happened to his brother. For one, he knew his brother was not suicidal. He was going to be released soon. It was a minor parole violation, nothing big at all. He had already done hard time. He was in a good place in his life. There was no reason in the world for him to commit suicide. So doing that and battling the feds on that, he realized for some reason they were holding back information on his brother's death, and he didn't understand why. He didn't understand why his brother had been killed. As he was doing that, word was passed to him from a couple sources that his brother's death had something to do with the Oklahoma City bombing. He dismissed this at first because he had no idea what they were talking about, until Tim McVeigh himself, before he was executed. Tim McVeigh, if you don't know, was the person who was blamed for the Oklahoma City bombing and executed, although he did play a major role. We feel there are other people involved. Tim McVeigh passed word to Jesse that his brother's death had been because the federal government thought that his brother had been Richard Lee Guthrie. Now, Richard Lee Guthrie was a former bank robber himself. Kenneth Trentadue did have a bank robber, a bank robbery criminal, very short criminal career in bank robbery, which in that he did do time for that. But they also shared other common characteristics. They had similar physical profiles. They were driving similar vehicles, even almost an identical tattoo in the same place. This was all coincidence. Kenny Trentadue had nothing to do with the bombing whatsoever. But that the federal government, for some reason, thought that he was Richard Lee Guthrie. And even more importantly, why did they think that Richard Lee Guthrie needed to be eliminated? We've managed to uncover some evidence that Richard Lee Guthrie, who was a member of the Aryan Republican Army and was robbing banks with his gang across the United States in order to raise money for some kind of white survivalist race war that they were planning. There's a lot of evidence that Richard Lee Guthrie was involved in the bombing, that Tim McVeigh, for at least for a portion of time, assisted with these bank robberies. This is something the federal government denies, despite the evidence. And we really don't understand why, because that would simply, if those people were guilty, they need to be held accountable. Anyways, Jesse's battle with the feds, he started issuing Freedom of Information Act requests to the FBI and the federal government to uncover evidence about the Oklahoma City bombing. Since his brother was dead and his family had already won a wrongful death lawsuit against the government because of the way they treated his brother and the way they treated the family after the death, basically Jesse went to war with the FBI. They know that he knew that they had killed his brother. And Jesse, although he's in Utah, he's from the hills of West Virginia. He grew up in a coal mining family, a very tight-knit family, and they do believe in justice for their own. And this is the way Jesse is doing it, is that he is pursuing all legal means to try to uncover information about the bombing. And he's uncovered a lot. May 11th, he's having a hearing in Utah to determine if he will be allowed to see the security videotapes that surrounded the Murrah building that showed what actually happened. Why this is important is because no one has actually seen videotapes, at least the public has not seen videotapes, of what happened when Tim McVeigh drove that truck up to the Murrah building. Because everyone else who saw him that day saw him with other people. They did not even use these tapes at trial to place him in Oklahoma City. And the only witness they produced to place him in Oklahoma City admitted under cross-examination that she did see him with other people. So this is going to be a very important court date coming up on May 11th. Hopefully we'll have Jesse on our show to talk about it afterwards. But they really need to release the tapes. They can make all of us look like fools who are questioning the official story. Make us look foolish by simply releasing the tapes that show McVeigh driving that truck up to the Murrah building by himself and getting out. But I suspect that those tapes will not show that.
That's right. And we do have people who have allegedly seen the tapes who indicate that they do not show that they show a second person. And well, that's absolutely right. And it's such an important aspect of the case. And I certainly hope that people will listen to either to my interview with Jesse Trentadue or really to any interview that he's given. It's just such an important angle on the case. And so much important information has come out through his tireless efforts. But turning back to Richard Lee Guthrie for a moment, there is the indication that Richard Lee Guthrie is John Doe number two.
Well, we think that there were several people involved on the ground that day. There were several John Doe number twos, and I do think that Richard Lee Guthrie was one of them. We've uncovered evidence lately through access to the defense archives of Tim McVeigh, reading FBI reports that Richard Lee Guthrie may have known several people close to McVeigh, and there was very strong evidence that they did work together on at least one bank robbery. And the fact that another John Doe number two, Michael Brescia, he was a racist who lived out of Elohim City, a neo-Nazi compound in eastern Oklahoma. Michael Brescia is a lookalike, is a just a knockout resemblance to the John Doe number two sketches. His alibi for that day is sketchy. He was involved with Andy Strassmeyer, who was also involved with the bombing. And he also knew Richard Lee Guthrie, and Michael Brescia had worked with Guthrie on at least one bank robbery for which he served prison time. So we have this this whole methodology, these other people involved, and for some reason the feds do not want to go there. One reason is many of these people were federal informants, like Andy Strassmeyer, a known federal informant. He was a West German intelligence agent. He came to the United States at the behest of German intelligence to investigate the sources of neo-Nazi literature that were emanating from the United States that were going into Germany. Of course, to produce or possess Nazi literature in Germany is a crime to this day. So they were going after the source, most of which lies in the United States and some of which was coming out of Elohim City in Oklahoma. Andy Strassmeyer went there. He was also working with federal law enforcement agencies on other projects, and he was likely involved with the Oklahoma City bombing. In fact, we know he was because another informant, a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms informant, Carol Howe, has gone on the record saying that they were talking about bombing the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. She took Andy Strassmeyer and others to the Murrah Building for scouting missions. She told her handlers all of this before the bombing. All of this was credible before the bombing. Once she went public after the bombing saying that she had warned them, suddenly she lost her credibility, and the feds tried to throw her in jail. But thankfully, she was able to afford a good lawyer who could get her out of the frivolous charges.
That's right. And Carol Howe's startling story comes from a sealed court transcript that Jesse Trenadue was leaked, and he has made that available. And that is now actually available on that interview page that I just conducted with him, available for download. So I certainly hope people will download that and take a look at it, because, again, that's extremely important. But going back for a moment to the issue of Richard Lee Guthrie, obviously this is speculative, but why then do you think they would want to get rid of Richard Lee Guthrie and ended up doing so with Kenneth Trenadue?
Well, Richard Lee Guthrie later ended up dead himself. He was eventually captured on bank robbery charges, and he was transferred to a federal prison, actually to a jail, and he was found dead. They said it was suicide, but it was very strange because he was getting ready to testify in a court case, which may have leaked some evidence about the Oklahoma City bombing, and he was getting ready to give an interview and write a book, which he said, in his words, would blow the lid off the Oklahoma City bombing. So perhaps he was going to go public. It's largely speculation. We suspect that he may have been an informant to some degree himself, but what we can establish for a fact with the bombing is that the ATF and the FBI had a proven methodology of using sting operations, utilizing a Ryder truck and ammonium nitrate explosives. Before the bombing, they were using informants to approach people in the Patriot and the white separatist movement. Not that they're one and the same, they're not. But in both movements, there was some overlap. But they were approaching people with their informants, asking them to blow things up with Ryder trucks and ammonium nitrate explosives. This is a proven methodology. What we have gathered and can prove is that there was a sting operation using this methodology, and that it may have gone wrong for whatever reason. We really don't know why. Others unknown may have hijacked the operation, whether it was some of the neo-Nazi informants who decided to turn the tables on the feds, or perhaps a darker element in the U.S. government who saw this existing operation and made it go live. We really don't know, and we won't know until the release of all the evidence. But it appears that Richard Lee Guthrie may have been silenced because he was involved with these sting operations, or they thought that he had turned the tables on them. I really don't know.
Of course, we don't know at this point, and of course, the documents that would help us to come to a greater understanding are being withheld for obvious reasons, because in any event, they will obviously give the FBI and other agencies a black eye, even if it's just a matter of incompetence. But
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's one point I wanted to get to, James, was that this is how cover-ups work. It's not like, let's just say that we're going to go along with the hypothesis that some element of the federal government decided to bomb the Alfred P. Murrah Building on April 19th, 1995. Obviously not all the government, but some part of the U.S. government, the CIA, whatever. The cover-up ensues through the FBI and the ATF, not because the FBI agents and the ATF street agents are covering up the fact that the government blew up the building. They're covering up their own screw-up, because it was their truck. It was their bomb. It was their informants. It was their operation. That truck was supposed to explode outside the Murrah Building at 3 a.m. earlier that morning when it was deserted. It was supposed to blow up an empty building. It was supposed to be a big PR stunt. We have evidence that they may have been waiting for the truck to arrive to bust it. but nothing happened. The truck never showed. It did show at 9 o'clock in the morning when the building was full, and it did blow up. And you have 168 dead people, and now cover-up mode goes into effect.
Well, let me stop you there. That's fascinating, because I've never actually heard that before. Where are you getting that it was meant to be done at 3 a.m.?
Through the work of State Representative Charles Key here in Oklahoma. He was an Oklahoma State Representative at the time of the bombing. When the investigation started going awry, he was approached by many survivors and witnesses and other people wanting him to open up a separate state investigation, which he did. And many thanks lies to State Representative Charles Key, because with his reputation and his status as a state legislature, many people were willing to go to him and give him information they otherwise would not have given to just a reporter or just an independent researcher. It's because of his status as a legislature that so much evidence has seen the light of day. He later informed the Oklahoma Bombing Investigation Committee to compile all this evidence, and that evidence is available for everyone to see in their book, which they published, called A Final Report on the Oklahoma City Bombing. But what happened was, during the course of his investigation, Charles Key managed to get an audience with a Senate staffer for a prominent state, for a prominent senator who from Oklahoma, who represented the state in Washington, D.C., a U.S. senator. He's able to gain an audience with a staffer. And he has gone on the record on this, and he says so in our documentary. He goes on the record for this. He's laying his reputation on this conversation. He says that this Senate staffer told him that basically the Oklahoma congressional delegation had been briefed by the FBI that the Oklahoma City bombing was a result of a sting gone bad. There was a sting operation. It went bad. That truck was supposed to be there at 3 o'clock in the morning. It did not show then. So that's where we're getting that. And also, like I said, we've accumulated evidence that that was a proven methodology. We were investigating leads from sources who are saying that they were approached by informants who later admitted to them that the ATF was trying to get them to bomb targets with a Ryder truck and ammonium nitrate before the bombing.
Well, absolutely. That is fascinating, and that ties into a lot of other pieces of information, including, from what I recall, the fact that the BATF was testing ammonium nitrate fuel oil bombs out in the desert in New Mexico or somewhere just prior to the bombing. Is that correct?
That is correct. A year prior to the bombing, an operation called Dipole Mite was funded by the National Security Council. They went out to White Sands Missile Range, and they started exploding ammonium nitrate bombs. What was interesting about this is that there had only been one reported case of ammonium nitrate being used in the United States in a terrorist act. That was the 1970 bombing of the Army Math Lab at the University of Wisconsin at Madison in 1970. That's the only reported case. But for some reason, in 1994, the National Security Council started funding the ATF to start exploding ammonium nitrate bombs, supposedly to test them or to prepare for their use as a terror weapon. I really don't know. But what's very interesting about that is that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, as it's called now, they are the supposed bomb experts in the federal government. It took them several tries to make the bomb go off. It didn't go off the first time. It took them several tries to make an effective one. And then coincidentally, one of the agents involved in that testing was in Oklahoma City, although it's not his home station. He was in Oklahoma City the day of the bombing, and he called in immediately after the bombing, called into headquarters saying that an ammonium nitrate bomb has just gone off in Oklahoma City.
Interesting. And we're led to believe, according to the official story, that Nichols and McVeigh were able to construct an ANFO bomb that worked extremely well, despite the fact that neither of them were supposedly well-versed in explosives.
Yeah, neither man had been trained in explosives, and the method they used to build a bomb, Terry Nichols was convicted as being the accomplice to McVeigh because he helped build the bomb, but Nichols was coerced by McVeigh. McVeigh had threatened his family, so Nichols went along and built a bomb that would never go off. And the way Nichols described the way he built the bomb was they took 55-gallon barrels, filled them full of fuel, diesel oil, and then took wet chunks of ammonium nitrate and shoved them through the bunghole of the barrels. And then they put in the detonators. That is not an ammonium nitrate bomb. That never would have exploded. And Terry Nichols knew this. That's why he did it, because he knew it would not go off. So, I mean, that is simply, that did not happen. In fact, after the bombing and during the trial, the British Secret Service and the intelligence agencies sent people over to observe the proceedings and to take part in the investigation, because the British had the largest experience with ammonium nitrate bombs, because the Irish Republican Army were the pioneers of ANFO bombs, because the great availability of ammonium nitrate in Ireland and in the struggle there in Northern Ireland, that the IRA, they used ANFO bombs thousands of times. The British intelligence, they had access to this. They had interviewed and interrogated bomb makers. They had raided bomb labs. And in their almost exact words, they sent people over because they're trying to figure out how these two guys did it, because they don't, as far as they knew, you cannot make an ammonium nitrate bomb that way.
Interesting. And from what I understand, there have been several or at least a few different versions presented of even what that bomb supposedly looked like. Nichols' version differed from the one that apparently McVeigh told to someone else about what the bomb looked like, and differed again from the version that the FBI eventually said was in the bomb, in the truck itself.
See, that's the whole thing about this, is that there is not one official story on anything. There are several. I mean, the federal government is at odds with their own people. The prosecution for the federal government is at odds with the official story. None of their stories being forwarded by the government or its apologists are congruent. The feds changed the story about the bomb. It kept on upping in caliber each time when the damage was so obvious that it cannot be done by an ammonium nitrate bomb. The setup of the bomb is different. I mean, McVeigh, in his supposed autobiography, has a setup of the bomb that's different from how it was presented in court, different from how the FBI says it was constructed. There is no official story, really. There's not. There's several versions of an official story, which we can all refute, but there's no congruent story.
Well, how about some of the other aspects of the case and the technical details of the bomb? For example, retired Brigadier General Ben Pardon and his testimony about the way that the ammonium nitrate fuel oil bomb could not have been responsible for the damage that we saw.
Yes, General Benton K. Pardon was head of the Air Force Armaments Laboratory for a number of years. He spent his career blowing things up for the U.S. military. He tested almost every bomb that came down the line to be produced for distribution. He would go out to ranges and just blow things up and do bomb damage analysis. That's what he did for a living. Shortly after the bombing, he went to Oklahoma City. He analyzed the bomb damage, and he issued a report, which he gave a copy to every member of Congress, and he said, and he lays it out, the exact reasons why, that there was no way that an ammonium nitrate truck bomb did that damage to the building. If you ever look at the damage at the Murrah building, you'll an overhead shot, the famous bite into the building where the daycare center was and where most of the damage was, that bite went almost all the way through the building. One would assume, as I did at first, that that bite was symmetrical to the crater, but it's not. It's asymmetrical. It's offset from where the truck bomb was. There are pillars intact between the truck bomb and the bite. Meanwhile, in the bite itself, there are pillars that are completely demolished. And this can be only explained, as Benton K. Pardon lays out, by charges that were placed directly on the columns to effect a collapse. This is further confirmed by several other independent analyses, including the analysis of Samuel Cohen, the inventor of the neutron bomb, who wrote a letter saying, "There is no way the laws of nature are against an ammonium nitrate bomb doing this damage." Furthermore, Elgin Air Force Base, the Wright Armaments Laboratory out of Elgin Air Force Base, an arm of the federal government, these are defense engineers, they decided to test the hypothesis of the Oklahoma City bombing. So what they did was they took basically cheap mock-up concrete structures without a roof. They weren't nearly as big or as strong as the Murrah building. The Murrah building was a federal building. It was a very solid structure that actually had been designed to withstand bomb damage. So what they found was, first, that when they decided to make the bomb according to the specifications as laid out in one of the official stories, that it was impossible. When you have eight or nine 55-gallon barrels that are supposedly bombs going off, that's not a bomb. That's eight or nine bombs going off in the back of a truck. When that happens, the blast waves tend to cancel one another out, and most of the remaining effect shoots straight up in the air. It does almost no damage to the building. So they actually had to construct a stronger bomb, a real bomb, to do the damage to the building. What they found was that the stronger bomb did less damage to their cheap mock-ups than what we see at Oklahoma City. And in the government's own conclusion, Elgin Air Force Base, the Wright Armaments Laboratory, own conclusion says there must have been bombs placed within the building.
Very interesting, but surely if there were bombs placed in the building, we would have eyewitness accounts of people seeing bomb-making materials being placed in the building beforehand, wouldn't we?
We do. We have the eyewitness testimony of a survivor named Jane Graham. Jane Graham is a very credible witness. She was a government employee. She worked in the building for almost 20 years at the time of the bombing. She knew everyone that came in and out of the building on a regular basis. She knew all the government services agency personnel. She knew all the maintenance personnel. She knew everyone in the building. And she was a union representative for the local government employees union. She had testified before Congress before on union issues. She was a very credible witness. A couple days before the bombing, she shows up in the parking garage as normal, and she sees three men in the parking garage, and they have maps, well, layouts of what appear to be the Murrah building laid out on the hood of a car. They are handling what she described at the time. She didn't know what it was. She said it was gray putty and wires, but that she was not familiar with, and they were pointing around the garage, and they seemed to be having some type of dispute. Later on, she would realize that this had something to do with the bombing, that this gray putty might have been C4 plastic explosive or something like it. So what she did was she went to the FBI and told them about this. Of course, they dismissed it. Well, when given a lineup of the people she had seen, those three men she had seen in the parking garage, she positively identified one of these men as Andreas Strassmeyer, the man I previously mentioned, the federal informant who was working with the federal agencies investigating neo-Nazis. So we do have at least one witness saying that there was explosives being placed inside the building prior to the bombing. Now, if they placed them there to explode at night at 3 a.m. when the truck was there for a big spectacular PR stunt, or if they intended it to go off when there were people in there, we don't know. But we do know that they were putting bombs in the building before the explosion.
So people who have seen some of the original news footage that was coming out of Oklahoma on that day might remember things like the second bomb that was announced even by the governor of Oklahoma, and that was announced that it was being removed from the building. Tell us a little bit about that incident.
Yes, there are several dozen reports. We have compiled them in our documentary. They have been put in the memory hole by the mainstream and local media. But that day and the day after, the local news were reporting several bombs being recovered inside the building, being pulled out. We have footage of the bomb squad pulling up and pulling bombs out of the building. And we have, for the documentary, A Noble Lie, we have footage, and this is going to be groundbreaking. We have footage of this from the sheriff's department. During one of the, after the initial bombing, there were at least three other further evacuations of rescue workers. What happened during these evacuations is that victims were left to die during these evacuations. They were told there were bombs in the building, everyone needs to get out. So they left. Some people stayed, continued with the rescue efforts despite orders. They disobeyed orders, they kept on rescuing people. Some of the footage we have acquired during one of these evacuations shows the fact that they have a stretcher laid out, they're in one of the pockets of the building, and they're pulling out bars of what appear to be C4 plastic explosive, and they're putting them on the stretcher and they're evacuating it during the evacuation when people are dying and bleeding inside. So this was not just because of some frivolous thing. They made the decision to sacrifice life to pull this out.
Well, that is absolutely incredible, and that is groundbreaking, and I certainly hope that you have copies of that footage distributed around, so that if something happens before the documentary gets out, that footage won't be lost, because that is absolutely incredible and vital to this case.
Oh yeah, we have well protected ourselves. We're well aware of how many interests are at stake in this cover up. So yeah, there's multiple copies well distributed.
Excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the documentary. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit of the background of that documentary, how it came together, how long it's been in production, when it's coming out, etc.
Okay. Well, it's called A Noble Lie. If you want more information online, you can go to anoblelie.com. But we started filming late last summer. We have compiled the majority of our shooting. Right now, we're in the beginning stages of editing. This is the hard part. We're compiling everything, putting it back together. We foresee its release in late summer. And so hopefully we will get it out by then. I do think we will. There's nothing holding us back right now. Most of our shooting is done. And we really have compiled some groundbreaking information. Not only have we, well, one reason we started out on this was that we wanted, like I said before, to get the message out to the most people possible. And that seems to be the documentary style. We're not filmmakers. We never thought we would be, but now we are. We're making a film to get this information out. So not only have we packaged for consumption all the information that's been compiled so far by the previous Truth Seekers, by Charles Key, V.Z. Lawton, Dale Phillips, Roger Charles, all the Truth Seekers in the early days who really risked their lives, risked their reputations, in some cases lost their reputations, and in some cases lost their lives to get this information out. We're going to be packaging that so people can see it all together. But we're also going to be presenting some groundbreaking information, including exclusive interviews with Jesse Trentadue, some witnesses that no one has ever seen on tape before. I mean, during the filming, we had to go out to Elohim City in eastern Oklahoma, the neo-Nazi compound where all these federal informants were plotting the bombing. We went out there to film a witness who saw McVeigh with these people, which the federal government denies to this day. That was a pretty intense experience. Our safety was threatened during that time. So it's going to be a really exciting, really groundbreaking documentary. I'm really looking forward for people to be able to see it.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing it, and we will certainly have you on at that time to talk more about it as well. But where can people go for more information at this point?
Well, anobelie.com, it's our basic website right now. There's just basic information on the movie. For more information on the bombing itself, you can go to okcbombingtruth.net. What that is a layout of 10 top 10 reasons to question the official story. And we have hyperlinks to the documents backing up our assertions that refute the official story. Now, this website is actually a short version of a flyer that we hand out in Oklahoma City and elsewhere. And we're going to be handing out a lot of these flyers pretty soon on April 19th, the 16th anniversary of the bombing. They have their big ceremony at the memorial here in Oklahoma City, where We Are Change Oklahoma, of which I'm a member, and James Lane, my co-host, is a founder of. We are going to be handing out these flyers to everyone who goes into that ceremony. We're going to be holding banners. We're not going to be protesting. We're going to be very respectful, quiet, memorializing the dead, but letting the people going in there know that what they're about to hear is a lie. Now, the memorial itself is a beautiful piece of work. It has a lot of power. The architects who designed it are sympathetic to our cause. But the museum and the people who run the memorial, they propagate a lie. They make their living off a lie. And in abetting an atrocity, a cover-up of an atrocity, and some of the people involved in that were actually involved in the initial cover-up. So we really want to let people know that a lot of people in Oklahoma and across the world know that what you're saying is a lie. We're not going to let you get away with your little illusion anymore.
Well, you say that people were involved in the cover-up. Who are you talking about in that case?
Well, some of the security people with the memorial were involved with the Oklahoma State Bureau investigation, and they were involved with questioning people and covering up evidence. I'd rather not name names right now until afterwards. Basically, the state agencies and oftentimes the guests they have at these ceremonies, usually it's President Clinton. I don't know actually who the honored guest is this year, but most of the years it has been President Clinton to come speak at the memorial. Of course, he was president during the bombing, and he knows that it's a lie.
Indeed. Well, if there are people in that area who would like to come out and help you in that effort on this April 19th, is there a way for them to get in touch with you?
Yes, go to wearechangeoklahoma.org. That's where we're organizing for the street action on April 19th, next Tuesday. We're inviting We Are Change chapter from adjoining states to join us. We're asking everyone in Oklahoma who's interested in the subject to come join us. Like I said, it's going to be very respectful. We want to honor the dead and honor the survivors and the witnesses who are going to be there, but we also want to let people know that the story is yet to be told. The full story is yet to be told.
That's absolutely true, and more of it will, I guess, be coming out later this year with A Noble Lie, so we're all looking forward to that. But before we let you go, perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about the Free Mind Report.
Yeah, it's a Free Mind Report. It's James Lane is my co-host. I'm the other host on there, and also Bobby Kessler. We're on once a week, Wednesday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Central here in the United States, and you can hear us online at freemindreport.com. We're on the Rule of Law Radio Network. Basically, we're just a news gathering and a talk show. We talk about current events. We focus on new developments in the Oklahoma City bombing, which are happening almost every month, especially with the work of Jesse Trentadue. And we have guests on. Our last guest was Dr. Bruce Levine, a very good guest talking about solutions to this corporate oligarchy that's trying to exert its control over the world. But we have a lot of good guests, and I invite people to listen on freemindreport.com.
Absolutely, yeah. Bruce Levine wrote the Rebel Yell.
He did write Get Up, Stand Up. That's his latest release.
Right, yeah.
I'm ordering it right now. It sounds like a great book. Oftentimes we have people on our show who, you know, we're always talking about problems. It's not really positive, you know, just hearing about how bad things are. But Dr. Bruce Levine has some really good solutions for what's going on. It basically begins with yourself and spreading outward. But I highly recommend going to freemindreport.com, listening to our latest archive, or ordering his book, or looking up his website, brucelevine.com, and just checking out his work, because it's really excellent.
That's right. Well, I have played a clip of him on my podcast before. I do recommend people check that out, and I certainly hope people will check out the Free Mind Report. So, Holland, just so much incredible information about Oklahoma City, and it's impossible to do it justice in a short conversation like this, but hopefully we can have you back again in the future to continue talking about this extremely important subject as more information comes out and as A Noble Lie is eventually released. So, thank you for all the time you've spent today, and thank you for all the work you've put into this this case, and let's hope we can continue spreading awareness and raising the level of awareness among the general public about what did or did not happen in Oklahoma City that day.
Well, thank you, James. Thank you for having me on and allowing me to spread this information. And also, we're going to be working on some follow-up projects. We realize that a documentary is not going to be able to encompass the whole of the work that's been done on the bombing. That's just to get the message out and let people know where else to look. We're working on a follow-up book project, at least two other follow-up book projects on this subject. So the work does continue.
Excellent. Well, that's good to hear. All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Holland, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, James, and thank you for having me on.